John chapter 18. We were kind of right at the latter part of that chapter. Good to see y'all this morning. Glad you are here. Let's begin with a word of prayer. Would you bow with me? Our Father, we are so very thankful for the day that you have given us in the quiet hour that we can assemble and study from your word. We pray that you'll help our minds to be open and receptive to your word, and help us to learn. Help us to study carefully so we can understand well what you've given to us and written for us. And help us, Father, to be encouraged in faith. We pray you forgive our sins and lead us in ways of truth and righteousness. And again, help our hearts to be humble. In your Son's name we pray. Amen. In verses 37 and 38 of chapter 18, where we were Wednesday night, you might recall the exchange that was taking place between Jesus and Pilate. And Jesus has tried to explain that his kingdom is not of this world. And I think that was probably some relief to Pilate, and because that would indicate that Jesus was not a threat in any way to him or to Caesar. And of course, the responsibility of Pilate would be to protect Caesar, to make sure that there was no insurrection, that there was no one trying to set up their own kingdom that would in any way be in competition to Caesar. But it was in that exchange, in verse 37, that Pilate said to Jesus, "Are you a king then?" And Jesus answered, "You say rightly that I am a king. For this cause I was born, and for this cause I came into the world, that I should bear witness to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth hears my voice." And Pilate said to him, "What is truth?" And when he had said this, he went out again to the Jews and said to them, "I find no fault in him." This was one of three times, at least that I can find, that Pilate says, as he's trying to go back to the Jews, those who had brought Jesus to him, "I'm not seeing the guilt. I don't have a reason to carry the charges any farther. I find no fault in him." Those to whom Pilate was speaking were hearing nothing at all of that. In verse 39, "But you have a custom that I should release someone to you at the Passover. Do you therefore want me to release to you the King of the Jews?" And then they all cried again, saying, "Not this man, but Barabbas." Now Barabbas was a robber. No, they didn't want Jesus released. They wanted Jesus killed. And in order to accomplish that, they were willing to have released to them one who has caused insurrection, one who was a murderer, who had been convicted of such. This is the point that some things have come to. On page 56 of your outline, just reading here a little bit on the page, "The anger and hatred against Jesus by the Jews became even more real to Pilate and to us. When they were willing to have Barabbas, a noted criminal and murderer no less, released and Jesus held and convicted. To have Jesus killed, the Jews were willing to take any position necessary. Reason and common sense had long left. Truly, they didn't care what it took at this point to have Jesus killed. It didn't matter if he was innocent of all charges. They weren't concerned about that at any point. And certainly now they've come to the point where there is no reason on the matter at all. Listen, hold your page here, but let's go back to Luke's account in Luke chapter 23. We are going to read quite a bit from Luke chapter 23 because at this point in this Bible story, Luke has a lot of detail that might be helpful to us just to understand what's going on. Luke 23, verse 1, beginning. "And the whole multitude of them arose and led him to Pilate." We backed up in time a little bit here. They're just taking him to Pilate. "And they began to accuse him, saying, 'We found this fellow perverting the nation and forbidding to pay taxes to Caesar and saying that he himself is Christ, a king.' And Pilate asked him, saying, 'Are you the King of the Jews?' And he answered him and said, 'It is as you say.' Then Pilate said to the chief priests and to the people, I find no fault in this man. But they were the more fierce, saying, he stirs up the people, teaching throughout Judea, beginning from Galilee to this place. Was there truth in what they were saying? I mean, was there any truth here? Yeah. Well, in what way was Jesus stirring things up? Yeah, he turned their apple cart upside down. You know, he was teaching the kingdom was at hand. He was teaching and trying to prove that, in fact, the Messiah had come. He had given them every reason to know and to understand and believe that he was the one that the prophets had spoken of. But they weren't hearing any of these things. Three times Pilate said, I find no fault in him, in John's account. We can read in other accounts, too, where Pilate said that. I think they're just repeated points. I think it's just actually three times that Pilate says, I find no fault in him. And in Luke's account, one reason I came over to Luke's account is because he records for us that here, there seemed to be, at least for a brief moment, a way that Pilate could be removed from the situation. Pilate didn't really want to commit Jesus to death. He could find no fault. And though Pilate would prove himself in time to truly be just a barbaric kind of leader, it seems to me in many ways he's being fair here with Jesus. He's tried to ask him questions and sees there's no guilt and tries to say he should be released. The people say no. And so he finds out that Herod is in town. Herod would be his boss. Herod also lived in Caesarea Maritime and had come to Jerusalem. Why was he in Jerusalem right now? I don't know exactly. I feel confident that Pilate was there because it was the Passover, and during this swelling of events in Jerusalem, Pilate was there to make sure there was no insurrection, to keep peace. That was his job as governor. But Herod is there. And so, you know, Pilate sees a way, well, if this can go to Herod, well, let Herod make the decision about what should be done. Luke 23, verse 6. When Pilate heard of Galilee, he asked the man if the man were a Galilean, speaking of Jesus. Is Jesus a Galilean? And as soon as he knew that Jesus belonged to Herod's jurisdiction, he sent him to Herod, who himself also was in Jerusalem at the time. And when Herod saw Jesus, he was exceedingly glad, for he had desired for a long time to see him, because he had heard many things about him. And he hoped to see some miracle done by him. Then he questioned him with many words, but he answered him nothing. And the chief priests and scribes stood and vehemently accused him. And Herod, with his men of war, treated him with contempt and mocked him, arrayed him in a gorgeous robe, and sent him back to Pilate. And the same day, Pilate and Herod became mutual friends, for before they had been at enmity themselves. So this is kind of an interesting event that takes place. So Jesus has walked from Pilate's court to where Herod is at. This is not real far, as best I can determine. And imagine the fact that Herod is excited to see Jesus. You know, because he had heard of him. I mean, what the Jews had said before, that this man has stirred up, you know, caused all kind of excitement, you know, all over the place. Well, there's truth in that. Everyone had heard about Jesus at this point. I cannot imagine anyone in Palestine who had not heard something about Jesus, whether it's the teaching that he has done or the miracles that he had done to confirm the word. Well, Pilate heard something about that. And so Pilate thought here that maybe he was going to get a show. You know, he wanted to see just what Jesus could do, but Jesus didn't perform any miracle. Have you ever wondered about that?
Why didn't he need to show anymore? He had already ended his work.
And why cast your pearl before swine?
Was it going to change anything? I mean, had the Jews, those who were casting the charges against Jesus, had they already seen miracles? Sure. I mean, at this point, if Jesus had done a miracle to Herod, he would have thought it was a great trick. He would have thought Jesus was a great magician or something of this sort. He might even thought he was a god. But it wasn't going to change the course of events. You remember, you know, the parable is sidetracked. The parable of Lazarus and the rich man. And how the rich man wished, as he was in Hades and in torment, how he wished that Lazarus or someone could go back and warn his brothers about what lay before them if they did not become receptive to the will of God. What was said? What did Jesus say in that message? Yeah, they've had Moses and the prophets. If they've not been willing to hear Moses and the prophets, they're not going to listen to someone who comes from the dead. Some application here. I mean, what would it have done if Jesus had done a miracle? Well, for one thing, when Jesus has done miracles, it's been with purpose to confirm his word. So people would listen to what he had to say. These were people that had just totally shut him down. It didn't matter what Jesus said. They were not listening.
We'll understand.
Another good point. That's right. And what you said a few minutes ago about why cast pearls before swine. You know, what would it have done? What benefit would it have been?
Aaron, I had a comment.
Who done this?
No, okay. Okay. I got one.
Oh, go ahead.
Brad has pointed out in the past that Herod had John the Baptist beheaded.
Yeah.
And Jesus doesn't even answer in one word here. He answered Pilate and engaged with Pilate a little bit, but with Herod, he doesn't even respond to him at all. And Herod wanted to see Herod. Yeah. And Brent, makes a connection between him having John the Baptist beheaded and Jesus' non-responsiveness within him.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there might be something to that.
It does. You do wonder something about that. Is that just Jesus? Jesus held John the Baptist in the highest regard. John the Baptist was that forerunner of the Messiah, Christ. And had done everything that God had wanted him to do. He did his work and his job. And Herod had him beheaded. I just don't imagine that Jesus has forgotten that.
Yeah. If he had done something to bring Herod over to his side, that would have sort of interrupted the whole purpose for him being there.
Mm-hmm.
He knew that he was there to be crucified mm-hmm. and raised.
It would have changed the storyline for sure.
Yeah,
in the end result, it still would have been the same, but it would have changed the storyline in some way. Levi?
The way it's worded, it seems like Herod knows he could do a miracle.
Because he'd heard of this before, and he just wanted to see it. Yeah, it doesn't seem as though he's questioning in any way that Jesus had the power to do a miracle. It's like he already knew that. So just kind of an interesting, thought to kind of add this into our storyline and to understand, when we read a little bit further, as we think about the fact that Jesus offered no defense. I mean, here he is before Herod, and he offers no defense. Reading a little bit further here, verse 13, continuing. And Pilate, when he had called together the chief priests and rulers and the people, he said to them, "You have brought this man to me as one who misleads the people. And indeed, having examined him in your presence, I have found no fault in this man concerning those things which you accuse him. No, nor did Herod. For I sent you back to him, and indeed nothing worthy of death has been done by him." Just making the point. We went from Pilate to Herod. He's back to Pilate now. Verse 16. "I will therefore chastise him and release him, for it was necessary for him to release one to them at the feast." And they all cried out at once, saying, "Away with this man. Release to us Barabbas who had been thrown into prison for a certain insurrection made in the city and for murder. Pilate, therefore, wishing to release Jesus, spoke again to them. But they shouted, saying, "Crucify him! Crucify him!" And he said to them the third time, "Why, what evil has he done? I have found no reason to put as to reason for death in him. I will therefore chastise him and let him go." But they were insistent, demanding with loud voices that he be crucified. And the voices of these men and of the chief priests prevailed. And Pilate gave sentence that it should be as they requested. And he released to them the one they requested, who for insurrection and murder had been thrown into prison. But he delivered Jesus to their will. That's John's account here of what happened. You have to really try to imagine the depth of the anger of those Jews. Like I said before, I mean, any reason has left their mind. There was no means of reasoning with them about this situation. Now, all they knew was that they wanted to kill Jesus. And so, three times at least, Pilate is going back and said, I find no guilt. And maybe initially he thought, like, okay, this is easy. We've had our trial. I find no guilt. Let him go. And they said the people went crazy about that. No, they can't have it. Perhaps even Pilate had underestimated the anger and the hatred of the people. And he's come to understand. You know, when he went before Herod and his soldiers and those who were there mocked Jesus, put a robe on him and I don't want to say that they beat him, but treated him contemptuously. And perhaps already, what we read the other night was Pilate may have already has scourged him to some degree. And now he's been mocked by Herod. Now he's back to Pilate again. And so, looking here, one of our questions on page 56, what did Pilate and the soldiers do to humiliate him? To get the fuller picture, you really have to look at several passages. We've seen this in Luke, you know, about some things that took place. If you look back at Mark chapter 15, let's see, beginning here, verse 16. And this is with Pilate. I think we might have read this the other night with Pilate. And the soldiers led him away into the hall called Praetorium. And they called together the whole band, and they clothed him with purple, and they twisted a crown of thorns and put it on his head and began to salute him. "Hail, King of the Jews!" And they struck him on the head with a reed and spat on him. Bowing the knee, they worshipped. And when they had mocked him, they took the purple off and put his own clothes on him, and they led him out to crucify him. This being, I would take it, after he had come back from Herod back to Pilate. So this is taking place now. Okay.
Herod didn't really want to put John the Baptist to death.
That's true.
Pilate didn't really want to punish or put Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
Both of them were in positions of power,
mm-hmm.
and neither one of them had the courage to do what was right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Both of them were in a position of changing the course of history, at least to some degree. In the end, you know, God's will on the matter would have still come about. But they would have been recorded different in history had they made some different decisions. In both cases, they bowed down, so to speak, to the will of somebody else. And there's bound to be a lesson to be learned out of that. What can happen when
they weren't in charge?
Yeah. In some ways, yeah. They wore the crown to prove they weren't in charge, so to speak. You know, they were in a position of authority, as Ken said, but not really. You know, going back to John's account, going back to our text, chapter 19, John chapter 19, at verse 1. So Pilate then took Jesus and scourged him. And the soldiers twisted a crown of thorns and put it on his head, and they put him on him a purple robe, and they said, "Hail, King of the Jews," and they struck him with their hands. And Pilate then went out again and said to them, "Look, I am bringing him out to you that you may know that I find no fault in him." I wondered, and I guess I've kind of assumed that Pilate thought that if he treated Jesus poorly and he beat him, and I can only imagine at this point what he looks like when they bring him out, you know, before the people again, with the crown of thorns and the blood, they beat him, they scourged him, thinking that, I can only imagine he's thinking that they'll think this is enough. This has been pretty rough. This has been pretty brutal. And again, I only imagine at this point, Jesus looks pathetic. And yet the people, that the minds of the people is not changed at all. Jesus has been scourged with the crown of thorns, with the purple robe. They struck him, they have spat on him, they have mocked him. That's where we are now. Now we are just minutes away from the cross. And so Jesus was brought again, you know, to Pilate. As we go between these accounts, we bounce back and forth again. I said on here, Jesus was brought back again to Pilate. Well, he's already been brought back. He's with Pilate now. We continue reading a little bit further in verse 5. Then Jesus came out wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe, and Pilate said to them, "Behold the man." Therefore, when the chief priests and the officers saw him, they cried out, saying, "Crucify him, crucify him." And Pilate said to them, "You take him and crucify him, for I find no fault in him." See, this is when I think he's paraded Jesus out there where surely they'll think this has been enough. You know, but still, they're just insistent, "Crucify him. You take him. You crucify him," he says. "I can't find any fault." Verse 7. And the Jews answered him, "We have a law, and by our law he ought to die because he made himself the Son of God." And therefore, when Pilate heard the saying, he was even more afraid and went again into the praetorium and said to Jesus, "Where are you from?" But Jesus gave no answer. Why was Pilate more afraid? He's brought him back in, and again he's asking questions. "Where are you from?"
Afraid the claims that Jesus were making might be true.
Even Pilate has got to be thinking, what if this is the Son of God?
And the comments that his wife made, which are not recorded here, also played in his spirit.
Yeah. At what point did that's actually Matthew's account, Matthew 27 and in verse 19. Here's another little factor. Let's just throw in. That at some point in this, let's see, Matthew 27 and verse 19, speaking of Pilate, when it says, "While he was sitting on the judgment seat, his wife sent to him, saying, 'Have nothing to do with that just man, for I have suffered many things today in a dream because of him.'" Oh, here's another little point of interest. And perhaps this is another reason why Pilate he's saying, "I'm finding no guilt." And then he knows, he gets this message from his wife who says, "I've been having dreams. I have suffered much. You know, don't do anything to this just man." And so Pilate brings him back into the room again and says, "Where are you from?" You know, I'm just trying to imagine what Pilate is thinking here, you know. It had to concern him when this statement is made about Jesus being the Son of God. There had to have been a lot on the mind of Pilate. There had to be a lot that he had to fear. You know, I mean, what would happen to his relations with Herod, his reputation as governor, speaking of Pilate? What would happen if an outbreak of violence in the city were to take place because of not crucifying Jesus? That's why Pilate the governor is there. to hold peace, to keep all of these Jews happy and satisfied. Let's just get Passover and get back to normal so I can go back to Caesarea. And so he's got to be wondering, what would happen here if we don't crucify him? Now, at the same time, he has to also be wondering, what will happen if he does crucify him? What if he is the Son of God? What kind of bad things can come upon me if he is the Son of God? And I'm not sure his way of thinking, but the Son of God or the Son of a God, I don't know. But it was something of concern to him. And so Pilate becomes frustrated when Jesus doesn't answer. Verse 10, back in John 19, verse 10. Yes. How do you explain that? You know, I mean, the scenario, here you have this ungodly man, Pilate, who doesn't see any guilt and doesn't want to crucify, and you have the godly people, the leaders of Israel, saying crucify him, when they know he's not guilty.
They were blinded by their hatred. They did not see this objectively.
Isn't that something? That sometimes we can let emotions, you know, rise to the point that we cannot see truth. Even when it is right in front of us, when it is right there, they could not see objectively. Hatred is a bad thing. I mean, hatred can well up in us in such a way where we cannot see the obvious, where we cannot see truth. What a danger that presents. There's a powerful lesson in that. So we see how the story is just rolling along. We see where it's going. Pilate, frustrated when Jesus won't even answer him back and answer his question, verse 10, Pilate said to him, "Are you not speaking to me? Do you not know that I have power to crucify you and power to release you?" And Jesus answered, "You could have no power at all against me unless it has been given you from above. Therefore, the one who delivered me to you has the greater sin." What? What's Jesus saying? Well, what did Jesus just say to Pilate? I mean, here's Pilate, you know, I mean, in his majesty, he's the governor. He's not like Herod or Caesar. But he's in a position of authority. "Do you not understand what I can do to you? I can have you crucified. Or I can choose to not have you crucified." How do you explain the response from Jesus? What are you saying?
First of all, it's extremely unique. How many men in his position would have had a similar response? They would have been falling down on their knees begging for mercy. And Jesus said,
that's a lot of boldness.
It's a very unusual one.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, he seems to be saying two different things here. And I think, first of all, what he's saying is God has the ultimate authority in what is happening in here. He's the one that is in control of all these things. But there's someone who's done something more grievous than Pilate. I'm not sure exactly who that's referring to, whether it's Judas or perhaps even the high priest. It's hard to know.
I'm not positive. But my thought on that is, contextually, it leads me to think that he's speaking about those who have brought Jesus to him. Now, I'm not sure I know. But just contextually, that seems to be what fits in the story. You know, when he says, "The one who has delivered me to you." Well, that would have been the Jewish leaders. I think so.
I have a question going on in my mind regarding this, the law from Leviticus 4:24 that says that they apparently are citing there in verse 7 that we have a law that had according to our law, we ought to die because of what they call blaspheming God. But they tried to stone Jesus already several times. They tried to push him off a cliff. And other people in the book of Acts, they stoned Stephen. Maybe they finally decided, they finally figured out they could not kill him. There was nothing they could do. So they thought, well, we're going to have the Romans do this, but we apparently have no power over this man.
And they kind of fall back on their law is the reason why they can't. But it's like you said, in the case of Stephen, law notwithstanding, that the mob became so incensed that they stoned
him. But was it a law of the Romans that the Jews could not carry out the death sentence?
I've read a couple of different things on this. But what seemed to kind of stand out to me is that because the Romans were the ruling power, that they had discretion, that they had the right, only they had the right in capital punishment instances to make a decision and to crucify. I've read a couple of different things about that, but that seemed to stand out to me as perhaps being correct. Deal with that carefully. I'm not sure, but that's just something that stood out to me.
Well, a little later on, they didn't have any problem with Stephen.
That's right. And that almost seemed like that was just a... I mean, they hadn't planned that out as they have with Jesus. It was just an emotional, uprising kind of thing that they became incensed at the truth that Jesus, or that Stephen was preaching there. And they just did that. Spontaneous, yeah.
You know, Les said, I was not here, I think, for the early study of chapter 18, but Les said something that made me think that, you know, they couldn't kill him. I mean, how many people did they send to arrest him in the garden? I mean, think about that. Here's this group of 12 men, and they send 600 soldiers, I think it was, as well as their officers and everyone else, to arrest him. Why? Why did they feel like it? Because they knew that there was something happening there.
Yeah, right. That's right. Earlier in John, Jesus has said this more than once. He's no one takes my life, but I give my life.
The Pilate thought he was in control, but he was the one to save
his life. Right.
But part of God's larger plan was for Jesus to give his life as a sacrifice.
Absolutely.
So he had no power.
And you're right. And so you have Pilate saying, don't you know I have the power to take your life or to let you go free? Jesus already identified, I believe it was in chapter 10, when Jesus was talking about the shepherd and the chief shepherd, you know, that a good shepherd would lay down his life, you know, for his sheep. And Jesus acknowledges that he is going to give his life. And no one takes it from me, but I give it. And so we've seen that demeanor with Jesus, as we've mentioned some already, all the way through this episode as it unfolds. I mean, just like in the garden, you know, that there were most likely hundreds that came in the mob, you know, to arrest Jesus, you know, and they bound him, and yet he was willing to just walk where they were going. I mean, he was giving himself, a lamb being led to a slaughter. Interesting thoughts, isn't it? I mean, here we are minutes away now, you know, from the crucifixion at this point. You know, the final testimony from the Jews received the attention, you know, from Pilate here. Looking at our last question on page 56. And why did this spur Pilate into action? Verse 12, beginning, it says, from then on, Pilate sought to release him. Just a point, you know. There's been three times now that Pilate said, I find no fault. You know, I find no fault in this man. And now he has had this other opportunity where he brought Jesus in and said, where are you from? You know, and do you not realize that the power to take your life? You know, and Jesus responded to him, you would have no power, we're not from above. Verse 12, takes us to verse 12. From then on, Pilate sought to release him, but the Jews cried out. See, Pilate is still wanting to release Jesus. And what other times, perhaps, did he try again, you know, to say something to the Jews? I don't know. And the Jews cried out, saying, "If you let this man go, you are not Caesar's friend. Whoever makes himself a king speaks against Caesar." All right, what was the effect that would have on Pilate? What were they trying to do? What do you think? Yeah, I mean, they're saying to Pilate, you know, they're more or less saying to Pilate, "Boy, if he gets away, you sure don't want that word to get back to Caesar. Because whoever becomes a friend of a king is not a friend to Caesar." That's what they're trying to say. They're putting pressure on Pilate. "You sure don't want Caesar to hear about this, do you?" A little blackmail, you know. That's really what they're trying to do. Verse 13, "When Pilate therefore heard that saying, he brought Jesus out and sat down in the judgment seat in a place that is called the pavement," but in Hebrew, Gabbatha. "And it was the preparation day of the Passover in about the sixth hour," by Roman time, this is 6 o'clock in the morning. "And he said to the Jews, 'Behold your king.' But they cried out, 'Away with him, away with him, crucify him.' And Pilate said to them, 'Shall I crucify your king?' And the chief priests answered, 'We have no king but Caesar.'" Really? I mean, that statement is amazing to me. They have no king but Caesar. Where is Jehovah God in this equation at all? I mean, this has nothing to do with the will of God. They're only looking at their own needs, their own interests, their own desires. But here again, to Pilate hearing these words, they're again turning this around in such a way, "We have no king but Caesar," almost implying to Pilate, "Who's your king?" You know, again, it's back to the statement before, sure it would be bad if Pilate heard about this. You see what they're doing? And when you think about the statements that Jesus has made how many times in John's account, that he and the Father are one, that everything he does is by the will of the Father, by the authority of the Father. The words that I speak are not my words, but those of the Father. If they're rejecting Jesus, they're rejecting Jehovah God. That's the power of the statement and where we are right now. And this man still can't get over this. "We have no king but Caesar." But I thought the same thing. It goes back to the children of Israel in 1 Samuel 8. "We want a king like all the other nations." They had the greatest of kings. But they had rejected him. And now they have rejected the one that God had foretold and promised. Now they have rejected the Messiah, the anointed one. Now they have rejected the one that God has sent to lift them up and to move them and to change them. They have rejected God again. The power of that situation is just incredible to me. And at this point, I mean, what else could be done? What else could be said at this point?
Just think about how much these Jewish leaders resented the Roman government and the rule over them. I mean, that they had taken their nation away.
That's
and
right.
And now, in order to have this man crucified, they are going to pledge allegiance to that very government.
The government that they hate. They are willing to pledge allegiance to Caesar in order to accomplish their deed. Amazing. Well, I'm not sure it's a good stopping point, but we have to stop. God willing, on Wednesday night, we're going to take up the beginning of chapter, or lesson 29. And we're just in the early part here of this. Well, we're halfway through chapter 19. But here we are at the cross. I mean, we are just minutes from the cross. Wednesday night, that's what we'll take up. Thank you for your good comments.